IT businesses in Sacramento, California.
From somewhere deep in the cloud and the corners of the earth, this is the Killing It Podcast, with a focus on helping you make sense and dollars of all things IT, with your hosts, Dave Sobel, Ryan Morris, and Carl Polachuk.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 11 of the Killing It Podcast. All right, we have some fun stuff that we're going to talk about today. I am joined, as always, by Dave Sobel and Ryan Morris. Welcome, gentlemen.
Good morning and good afternoon.
So our first topic is probably a little unusual. I want to talk about technology in schools, and partly because it's just so critically important, and we don't pay enough attention to it, in my opinion. So, you know, when I think about technology in schools, it's probably one of the biggest challenges we have, aside from the fact that just in general, the schools are the biggest challenge that we have, at least in the United States. We have so many problems that when you think about how do we get new technology in schools, it's an almost insurmountable challenge. And I guess I'm just not smart enough to figure out how we overcome it. One school's got a robotics program. The other school doesn't have tablets yet. Some schools give everybody a laptop. Some keep the laptops locked in the closet. And I don't know that there's a way out of this. I've thought about starting robotics programs here in Sacramento, but you literally can't go through the school system to do it. Teachers aren't paid to do stuff after school. Teachers aren't paid much at all anyway. You know, who's going to pay for the resources? You know, it just goes on and on. And then if you look at programs outside the school, well, you know, that's a whole nother kettle of fish. And unless you are a large nonprofit association, it's hard to get stuff like that going. And at the same time, we complain that, you know, these kids nowadays, you know, they're not ready for the future. So, and I'll just give you a couple examples. So we had an issue in the school district where I was working, giving some, and on an advisory council, I guess is what you would say. And we got a bunch of these really great laptops. HP put out this multi-million dollar grant, bought a bunch of laptops, gave them to the teachers. Teachers locked them in closets so none of the kids would break them. Teachers didn't learn how to use them. Pretty soon they were 3 years old. Warranties expired. So they said, all right, well, we need laptops that were cheap and we don't have to worry about people breaking them. So then they got a bunch of Chromebooks and then everybody got them, but the teachers didn't know how to use them. And so it was no better than not giving them to the students. And of course, the students divide very nicely between those who have 6 computers at home and those who don't know how to spell PC. And the digital divide is getting wider and faster than ever before. So maybe I just am like blanking on ideas, but I don't know what we do with this.
Well, I will say, so you have touched on a topic of very individual passion here for me, because it's something that, I mean, I grew up around teachers. I live around teachers. My daughter just recently completed her master's in education to be an elementary school teacher, right? So I've been paying attention to this topic for a long time, but I've also been very fortunate to be around some people who are doing some incredibly successful things in public schools in the United States, in educational programs internationally, getting not just government funding, but private industry funding, right? So this is something I've been paying attention to for years. And I think the first thing that we have to really embrace is the idea that it's not nearly as difficult to get into the business of selling to schools as it used to be, right? There once was a point where if you asked a question like, do you know how to sell to the education marketplace, specifically K-12 versus higher ed, do you know? Do you have a contract? Are you on state purchasing agreements? Are you in? And if the answer was no, then the answer was, don't even try. It's not worth the effort. It's going to be a nightmare. And then once you got through all of that bureaucratic nightmare, the opportunity was either for tablets back in the day or Chromebooks now that carry with them in a bulk purchasing open bid world, an average of somewhere around 2% of margin on them. Why would anybody in their right mind want to get into that business? I will fundamentally say the bureaucracy is nowhere near as restrictive as it used to be. Schools are thinking proactively, and it's not just about the Chromebook, right? There is some phenomenal educational technology in the classroom, as well as at the campus level, as well as at the inter-campus or beyond into the internet world. There are technologies that will absolutely blow your mind and make you wish you could go back to school. But it begins with that business decision of, can I speak school and do I have access to these humans? And then can I bring to bear the assets of the industry to actually get these tools into people's hands? There's some humongous gaps right now, and we'll talk about what I think those answers are, but I will say it's a hell of a lot more interesting marketplace now than it was 5 years ago.
It's interesting you say that, because so I polled some people and I polled my Facebook page to try and get some input from educators, because I have lots of friends in education. I've got lots of people involved there. And they came back with a lot of really smart thoughts. But as I looked through it and I was looking for a theme, for me, the theme of everything that they were talking about was the lack of skills and the lack of resources. It was the human side of the technology.
Skills more than by administrators and teachers?
It was actually pretty universal. It's about the helping the teachers, helping the administrators, helping the parents, helping the kids. That it's the people part of it, what was missing. And I was thinking, it was funny, Carl, as you were describing it, your description of the things were putting the tech components in, not describing the support, the people around it. Like, well, we have to buy this iPad, this laptop, this technology. And we, as all people in the IT field, know that all of this stuff requires humans and the skills around it. And I think for me, the theme that I'm seeing is that our investment needs to be in that portion. The tech is much less important.
I couldn't agree more. Right. And I mean, right down to the brutal instructional development process, right? So my daughter just finished her master's degree. In her undergrad and grad, all of this to become a teacher, to get certified in more than one state, she was required to take and participated in precisely zero classes on how to teach with modern technology. And not that's nowhere near unique to her experience, because every teacher that I know that's coming out of school now, whether it's 4-year or a beyond graduate program, nobody's teaching the teachers how to teach with technology. And that leaves a phenomenal gap in the adoption. And to Carl's point, if you expect to just, you know, if you build it, the teachers will take it home and do it on their free time and learn how to do this stuff just for the benefit of humanity. Bullshit. That's never going to happen. And it's not fair to expect something like that. But if you can approach them, right? Now, number one, somebody needs to be smarter than me to address, like, getting that into the university curriculum, that as a baseline requirement for certification, you got to know what a smart board is and a document camera and need to know how to do the flip the classroom instructional model. If you don't know how to use technology, then you shouldn't be a teacher in today's world. And then bring that not just to the new students, but in service to the existing teachers as they are already in the field. I mean, the impact and the reason that I'm so passionate about it is that when you see successful technology deployments in the classroom and across campus, A, students actually want to be there, right? Like, some of the coolest things I've ever seen are STEM labs in South Carolina, where a school put it together in a way where they've got four different programs and they go 4 different days of the week, and kids will knock themselves out to be the one who gets to be there on that day, right?
Right. Like, and we're running out of time on this one, but you know, part of the challenge is also that what do you do in elementary school? What do you do in junior high? What do you do in high school? They all need this graduated level. And we have stuff as simple as, I mean, I don't know if you've seen it, but there's these stories where they try to standardize the STAR test in an electronic format, give it on a tablet, and they give up on that because the teachers and the students between the two of them can't figure out how to do the test. So,
yeah. And by the way, do you know why, just as a quick trivia point. Do you know why the standardized testing protocol for public schools in the U.S. that can be delivered on a computer platform must be delivered on a laptop instead of on a tablet? Do you know why that is?
No.
Because the Microsoft folks recognized that if they could get through the lobbying process a requirement written into the statute that said in order to qualify, it must have a physically attached keyboard, that that would lock the Apple tablet family out of that from a competitive point of view. And therefore, that's why you can't take tests on tablets right now.
Thank God for genius, eh? Right?
Well, I want my opportunity alarm. I'm going to leave everybody with this one sentence from a teacher as I was polling for this. Teachers would love to have folks with IT skills and who love kids in education who would be open to co-teaching. And she didn't just mean assisting. She meant co-planning, co-delivery, and co-assessment. That set off my opportunity alarm.
And by the way, they want somebody to manage this stuff for them, right?
Yep.
Manage service providers, please.
And I totally love that. And I love the idea. But the question I got to leave you with, who pays for that? Or is it a totally volunteer thing across every school in the United States?
Paid well, gigs. That's next time.
Stay tuned. We will revisit this.
We don't do stuff for free.
All righty. What's up with you, Dave?
Well, so I had an interesting thing to bring for a bit of a rant for us to talk about something. So I was at an event recently, and I won't call out the event, I won't call out the speaker, but I will call out the way it was presented. So it was two talking heads on stage, as all three of us love to be talking.
And they're done.
And the question was posed saying, hey, what's your take on Microsoft? And the talking head dove in on saying, the first topic of discussion was the end of life of Windows 7 and the channel's outrage over the OS being end of life. And I just shook my head in there, and I could not keep myself like physically from reacting, because my take is Windows 7 came out a decade ago, like one decade ago. It came out in 2009. I Googled it. And if you're, and by the way, when it released, Microsoft said when it would go out of service. They were very clear about that.
Day one.
And you look at say, well, let's compare against, I don't know, Apple, who ages things out after, you know, they support the current and one version back. And then you've got iOS where they'll support the current one. And you look at Android where they support the current one. How much more do you want from Microsoft, everybody? They're giving you a decade and they've told you about it. And then everybody points out things like, you know, oh, the U.S. Navy, you know, the U.S. Navy is, the government is still using these old versions. Oh, my God, they're so horribly out of date. And my observation is, yeah, you know, because they build boats and ships like destroyers and aircraft carriers whose service length is far longer than the OS. And they pay Microsoft a boatload of money. Actual boatloads of money.
A battleship load of money.
to maintain that. And they say, look, we know that we're going to need this technology to be in service far longer. We have planned for it, and we'll pay the vendor to support it for us because we know it's a requirement, and we'd rather the battleship and the aircraft carrier and all these things be super reliable for a very long period of time.
Well, and there've always been the enterprise market and the small and medium business market.
Right.
You know, when I worked at HP, we had the thing called the COE, Common Operating Environment. These are the approved operating systems, software, version levels, right? You could not install newer stuff than that. And it was because you have to do it to 99,000 employees. And every one of those things has to work together. And right. You can't get something approved in the COE in 3 years, right? Let alone every 6 months.
My rant, my reaction to this is the how can you be outraged? You know, channel people, how can you be outraged? You knew about this the moment it was available. They've been very clear for as long as they've been around. They tell you how this all works. And by the way, your job is to set expectations with your customer about when things will.
Well, there's still groups talking about Small Business Server on Facebook. Right? So there are people who fall in love with their technology and refuse to move ahead. You know, this was big in 2008, 2009 when the recession hit. I remember people saying, I will not learn one more generation of technology. And obviously, those people are no longer in business, 99% of them. But here's what happens is that people fall in love with this and they violate what I consider to be one of the primary rules of what made me successful as an IT provider. We never separated the generation of the hardware from the software. What that means is I will not install an old operating system on new hardware.
Right.
I will not install a new hardware with an old operating system, right? And so I remember one time somebody was going on and on whining about Vista, and I mentioned publicly that I never had a problem with Vista. And Susan Bradley, one of the Microsoft MVPs, said, that's because you don't upgrade old hardware. I'm like, exactly.
Well, exactly. Well,
I mean, to that point, right? My reaction since the dawn of time, I mean, when I was a young sales kid in this industry, one of the very first things that I learned was, God bless Microsoft and when they de-support an old version, because then everybody else gets paid, right? And I mean, back in the day where we finally started adding, you know, we go 32-bit, 64-bit, and holy crap, that my computer's not fast enough, and everything ground to a halt. Would you like to be modern? Would you like to use new technology? Because, by the way, in addition to your OS and all of your applications, I'd also be happy to sell you a new computer, and by the way, more bandwidth on the network, more capacity in your server. As soon as one of those things goes away, the entire industry lines up with future opportunities. And that's a very
Microsoft has taken forever to get to the point where they will actually turn their back on old technology. They have worked. The Windows 10 is the first operating system where they actually say you can't use really old crap.
Yeah.
And I think it's a good thing.
And God bless them for that, because it will force customers to become either modern and relevant or admit it and fall off the curve, right? I mean, my very favorite business quote of all time, if you go back into the canon of W. Edwards Deming in the total quality management world, right, from back in the days of introducing the concept of continuous improvement, evolution is not mandatory. Then again, neither is survival.
Well, but my thing is I really do look and say, like, when you invest in any technology, and I mean this broader than just IT technology, I really do mean it, in you have to know how long its expected lifetime is. You know, when I buy a car, I think about its expected lifetime and how it ages. When I buy, you know, an appliance, I think about its expected lifetime and its aging, like how it's aging. Computing technology is the same thing. And by the way, we're completely inconsistent, because the lifespan on your phone is totally different than the lifespan on your computer. And yet, and you're outraged that, oh my God, in my computer, I have to upgrade every 3 to 5 years, and I'm being generous, but my phone gets upgraded every freaking year. Like, it's a, you know, we're completely inconsistent. You have to think about its lifetime. And that's just part of the requirements. That's a requirement of the IT provider. But by the way, that is a requirement to the customer. And you have to teach it.
And part of the issue is the people fall in love with their operating system. And so they don't push their clients. And so when their clients have old systems, they're like, hey, my clients never want to upgrade. Like, well, neither do you.
Well, but by the way, you can pay for that privilege. You are welcome to write a check to go into extended
support. If you have a battleship full of money.
Right.
Well, the other thing is, you know, Dave, I know that you love the iOS. When this discussion was up on Facebook, one of the comments I saw from somebody I'm related to was that, hey, I've had the same machine for whatever, forever, and Apple just keeps upgrading the operating system. And so I have the latest operating system, even though I have a very old computer. And so their perception is that they do have the latest stuff, even though the hardware is old, because they have been given this operating system.
Sure.
But again,
Apple sets expectations.
If you take Dave's terminology, I think it's very important. If you live and work in the business of technology, customer requirements translate into business opportunities, right? Oh, I must have some certainty of standardization and operating consistency. Cool. I'll bet you I know a guy named Carl who could help you with some standard operating procedures in a common operating environment.
He's got a book
right?
or two.
And by the way, he also happens to be a professional in the industry whose job it is to not just stabilize today, but also to look down the road 1 year, 2 years, 3 years. And part of the standard operating procedure is a methodical, seamless, transparent upgrade life cycle that leads you from today's standardized platform into the future standardized platform, where I didn't have to turn you off and do a cutover and experience all kinds of chaos because a professional was paying attention to that. Now, if that's not part of your business offering in the world of managing technology solutions, then you are the plug in the pipe for your customers. This ought to be completely transparent to the customer, and it's a way to get paid for them to look at it and go, this is all really hard and confusing. And your answer is, well, isn't it a good thing that you're talking to me? Because exactly. I eliminate all of that complexity for
right.
you.
And if right. I would be remiss if I did not observe that I also cannot believe that this speaker, when asked what about Microsoft was top of mind, came up with this.
Exactly. Like Microsoft is doing so much cool stuff.
I mean, Microsoft is like, you know, I look at them and say they are so interesting right now. They had a period of being kind of not interesting.
Oh my gosh. Well, so we got to move on, but what Microsoft is doing right now, they have put as much energy into blockchain as, you know, the second and third and fourth competitors combined. They put as much energy into artificial intelligence as the rest of the industry. They have these huge things where they have separated themselves out into these places where you can just go dig into that for the rest of your life and not pay attention to anything else Microsoft is doing. And they're huge, huge advantage.
But again, God bless Microsoft, because when they stretch the front end of the mass market technology platform, everyone else either moves forward with them or becomes a dinosaur. And we are the people who get paid to keep all of the rest of it relevant.
All right, last word, Dave, and then we'll move on.
Well, it's just the look forward, people, and know that the management on this is what's important. If you're spending time worrying about end of life on Windows 7, you're looking the wrong way.
All right. So, hey, here's a transition for you. Speaking of looking to the future, who wants to talk about Motorola Iridium? Nobody?
What? Carl, you've blown everyone's mind.
So I first invested in Motorola when I heard about Iridium, because I thought, man, you're going to put satellites all over the world and you know, it's going to change the future. And then they went bankrupt, right? Because they were launching one satellite at a time. And last week or 10 days ago or whatever, SpaceX launched 60 satellites on one rocket. Now, this isn't a rocketry show, but holy smokes. And their deployment is almost genius magical, right? I mean, they launch this thing up there and then it starts spinning, and each of these satellites just basically falls out with a slightly different trajectory. And now 60 satellites are in orbit.
It's so funny you bring up Iridium.
The iceberg.
I have friends that were on that worked at Iridium, like that actually worked there here because they were based here in Northern Virginia. Now it blows my mind. Like what's going on with some of these communication technologies? Like it's ideas that we had 20 years ago that were too hard to implement now are now coming to fruition.
And right. And where this matters is that these things, you know, on the good side, when they get to about 400 satellites, which will be by the end of this year, shockingly enough, they will begin offering services to have internet connectivity through the satellite with small antennas, and you'll be able to buy into this. On the other side, on kind of the negative side, talk about junk in space. They eventually are going to have 12,000 satellites if they can stay within the limits of what the FCC is allowing them to do. But it also means if you're a stargazer, you got to look around all of these 12,000 little dots in the sky to see if you can find Jupiter when it's up in the sky. So,
well, and this speaks to, again, I remember a very wise individual in our industry pointed out years ago that the triggering event that made managed services viable, was universal access to broadband, right? In a world where we could now do things remotely that once required you to be physically present, now an entire industry and business model was opened up. Well, this one is universal access to continuous connectivity. Everybody talks about, you know, this concept of the fabric of connectivity. If you can think of a world where you do not have to plug in and you do not have to be in proximity to a tower, but you will have universal fabric access to 5G bandwidth. To Dave's point of looking forward, people, I don't think we can fathom quite yet what the flavors of services will be. Augmented reality, mixed reality, the applications of remote assisted smart objects, bringing back a world of smart glasses, which we've all seen and laughed at in the past, making them legitimately viable in the real world. But we are now going to be in a world of, no matter where you go, no matter what you do, you are connected to broadband technology. You don't have to sit at your desk. You don't have to worry about whether or not you've got broadband access anymore. Now it's quite literally everywhere simultaneously, and that's physically impossible without that network of 12,000 pieces of space junk.
Well, and I'm fascinated with what bandwidth does in all kinds of areas. So I'll go down a little rabbit hole. For example, so I'm a gamer, and I'm not a good gamer. I'm just a gamer. But while we're recording, E3 is going on this week, so there's a whole bunch of announcements. But the two that I want to highlight, and then a third example is Google Stadia did all their announcements last week, which is the ability to stream. You know, Google's going to do a bunch of streaming of gaming out of their data center. Microsoft has their xCloud project, which is also, you know, the ability to stream games out. And then I use a technology called Shadow, their shadow.tech, where I don't have a gaming PC anymore. I have a cloud dedicated resource that streams to my endpoint, which is the little $150 hockey puck that they sold me, which just has the keyboard, monitor, and mouse to it. And I game on that thing. Like, it's streaming out of the data center, the machine moves around with me, but you're going to be able to stream games. And the reason is I look at this is because latency is such a big deal with gaming. Right, because the turnaround time to it. So essentially, if you can game with this stuff, we can pretty much solve just about any problem that you want, because everything else is generally easier than that set of requirements. And so, you know, for me, what's happening from an application perspective is super interesting to look at, because we can do some just really amazingly cool stuff.
Yeah, well, and think of it in the context of Apple's recent announcement about the arcade as a subscription service, and then into the commercial applications of this, right? You mentioned as you eliminate latency, the things you can start to do with telemedicine, with remote instruction, with remote control of physical environments and servicing like a robot does, but guided by a human in a remote connection. All that stuff is now possible because we're no longer doing this at the speed of dial-up. We're no longer doing this at the people that I'm radically jealous of who actually get a gigabit from their local cable provider, because I won't mention my loser local cable provider who on a good day at 2 o'clock in the morning, I can get 250 down, but you know.
Well, the other thing that I want to just throw in right as we finish here is the opportunity for super rural developing countries, right? The ability to be able to say, look, suddenly you have all of these other resources, you know, their education system will quote unquote skyrocket, right? Mm-hmm. So, and as well as so many other opportunities, and it will bring, you know, they will pay less than we will pay, right? North America will pay more, and that's totally fine. but it still brings massive, massive opportunity.
Well, and that's the thing, right? It's the distribution of access that eliminates proximity as a fundamental requirement, which means I could be anywhere and do anything, and why do I need to live in a crowded old city anymore when I could live wherever the heck I want and be doing whatever I want at that time and still be connected? You know, I've often said, people say the world is overcrowded. And I say, well, I grew up in Salt Lake City, Utah, and I challenge you to come with me on an airplane, fly to Salt Lake City, get in a car, and drive 6 hours in any direction on the compass. You will become convinced, as I am convinced, the world's not overcrowded. We just ain't using the space very efficiently.
The distribution issue, as usual. Dave, any final comments?
You know, I've, again, for me, this is the opportunity alarms, right? So where the last thought is, look, I want people to start thinking about what this does to the changes of design, network design. When it is faster to just go out on the public internet, you will start doing that. And so, and by the way, this is not far off. This is stuff we have coming.
Literally around the corner. So we're going to get to our final segment, but I do want to just remind folks, we have so many topics. Just before we started recording, we spent 15 minutes talking about all the topics we have.
All the topics and stuff we wanted to talk about.
We can't possibly cover. So we appreciate your feedback. We appreciate you sharing this. We have, I think we can say we have 100 solid listeners who come back week after week at this point. We want to make that into 100,000. So help us out. We do have over 1,000 downloads. So that's pretty cool. And we appreciate it. And send us your comments and your questions at killingit.smallbizthoughts.com. And with that, gentlemen, what is going on off the grid?
I'll dive in there. So this is my last week at home before 2 weeks of travel and a week off, because I will be in San Diego next week, and I will be in New Zealand the last week of June.
All right.
This coming weekend, though, is my wife's birthday. We will not disclose a number because I like being married and not divorced. So we're hoping we're hosting a tapas and good wine event on Saturday night. So that'll be the highlight of my upcoming week as well.
Very cool. Well, in Sacramento, there's a little town not too far from here that's having a Battle of the Brews. So once again, I make sure that I have the right credit card on Lyft, and I will Lyft and Uber my way around for the weekend.
Nice. Speaking about the benefits of proximity, both of those are very location dependent. I wish I was in your town. Yeah, my world offline is I'm actually on an assigned schedule to relearn how to play golf in a non-embarrassing way, because we've just finalized our travel arrangements for a milestone birthday of mine that's coming up next month, and we're going to travel to the birthplace of golf. We're going to Scotland, and wow. I would really like to not humiliate myself. And
you're
going to
take your one good club.
Yes, I'm going to take my new good golf club, and I'm going
rent the rest.
I'm going to apologize in advance to the good folks of Scotland and try not to disrespect the hallowed grounds. And so honestly, it seems silly, but I have to play golf 3 times in the next 7 days.
I love the way you say that. Have to play golf.
I must. It's a requirement.
You got to do what you got to do. All righty. I think that's it. Thank you all for listening, and join us next time on the Killing It.
Thanks for tuning in to the Killing It podcast. Please share with your friends and tell everyone to subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, and all the podcast places. Join us next week and help us keep killing it in the technology business.